just in a general way, what my life was like, what happened to me, and what my life looks like today. I grew up here in Montgomery County. I have an older sister and my folks, and you could have asked me as a kid what my life was like, and I would have told you it was terrible, which is absolutely not the case. You know, I come from a very loving, caring family. My father and mother both worked very hard and provided quite well for us. We grew up upper middle class, and I had I don't know if I had just about every advantage in life, but I had quite a few advantages growing up that most of my friends didn't. And so needless to say, I had a decent upbringing. My parents weren't really religious, but they took us to church growing up, and because they wanted to introduce us to religion and allow us to grow up in a faith and explore and discover and kind of allow us to have our own experience with it. As a kid, I just wasn't right in the head. I was an itchy, nervous, little boy. Like I didn't know what to say. I was concerned, with what you were saying about me or what you thought of me. I didn't know where to put my hands, and, I was just a wreck all the time. And, what I came to find out, when I got sober was described as restless, irritable, and discontent, you know? And, I don't really ever remember the first time I drank, but I do remember the first time I got drunk. I traveled up to Ohio for one of my cousin's high school graduation parties. And when our families get together, when the Ruths get together, we tend to have a pretty good time. And after dinner that night, I jumped in the car with my oldest cousin, and we drove back to his apartment, and his roommate came home shortly after we did. And I remember we all were sitting in the kitchen, and my cousin's roommate walked over to the cabinet and opened up the door, and off the top shelf he grabbed two bottles, a bottle of vodka and a bottle of gin, and made two drinks, and him and my cousin proceeded to sip on them, and I can remember watching like the mood change, right? They began to smile a little wider and a little brighter, and they began to laugh and joke and have a good time, and they kept pouring and pouring, and after a little while they decided, hey, let's give the kid a little bit. And I remember they went and grabbed a shot glass and gave me about half a shot, a baby shot. And, I'll never forget. It was gin. Like I can still smell that today. And it takes me right back to that night in their apartment. And, they kind of coached me up and taught, this is how you're supposed to do it. And this is how a man drinks, and kind of held my breath, tipped it up, put it in my mouth and swallowed it whole. And, I'll remember it tasted like hell, and it burned going down. And, I remember thinking to myself, God, this stuff is terrible. And all of a sudden, it hit my gut, and I got this incredible feeling. Like it's like this warmth washed over my entire body. And, I remember my shoulders sank, and I just kind of went, and all of a sudden I felt okay. For the first time in my life, I felt okay, it seemed like. And, we stayed up for a little while that night, and, I remember we were laughing and joking and carrying on in the kitchen, and it was such a great night. You know, all of a sudden, I didn't feel so tense. I felt like I could relax. I felt like I could be myself, and it was okay. Like that was good enough. And, after a little while, my cousin and his roommate went to bed, and, I decided I was having such a good time. I pulled a chair into the kitchen and, climbed up and got those two bottles back off the shelf and proceeded to have a little bit more. I can't remember if it was a lot more or a little more, but I left both bottles on the counter, and the next morning, I come into the kitchen as they're making breakfast, and apparently they'd been talking about me, because they both woke up and walked in the kitchen and saw the bottles sitting there, and one roommate looked at the other and was like, "Dang, I think you were hitting a little hard last night. Did you come back out here after I went to bed?" And he was like, "No, it wasn't me." And well, I was the only other person there, and they were like, "Wow, I think the kid came back in here and had a little bit more." You know, it was a great night. And, in a nutshell, I remember what that felt like. It was that freedom. And, I chased that whenever I really could. I didn't really have a lot of access to alcohol, growing up, but, given the right set of circumstances, you know, I was willing to risk it all to go out and drink. What that would usually look like was, me and some buddies would, you know, pull some cash together, and we'd drive over to the local beer store, and, we'd sit in the parking lot, and we'd ask somebody, who looked like we could trust them, to go in and buy us like a case of beer. And, I think by my 14, by the time I hit 14, I could finish a 12 pack by myself. Right. And, I thought that was something to brag about. Right. You know, I had a tolerance. I could handle my liquor. And, I thought that made me a big deal, actually. And, you could have asked me right then and there, if I thought I had a problem with drinking, if I thought I was an alcoholic or anything like that, I would have told you no. Like, you know, I have a lot of fun. This is social drinking, and I didn't really see anything wrong with it. I proceeded to do that wherever I could, and as long as the grades were okay in school, as long as I wasn't getting any trouble, you know, mom and dad kind of turned a blind eye to that. And, they would catch me every so often, and I would get the look, you know, or I'd get they point the finger and have a few words with me about it. But, you know, and growing up in high school, like I was a honor roll student. I had a part-time job. I was a varsity athlete all 4 years in high school. I had a cute girlfriend, right? And, so from the outside looking in, it appeared, that everything in my life was going well. But, I was still, restless, irritable, and discontent, right? I always had that itchy feeling. I was blessed, with a lot of good friends in high school. I was voted captain of the wrestling team my junior and senior year by my peers, right? And, I still never felt right. I still didn't feel good enough. I was still worried about where I was going to put my hands, what I was going to say, what people were saying about me. If I walked into a room and people were laughing, they were laughing at me. Right. If I walked in a room and a group of people were talking, and as I crossed the threshold and they looked up at me, I knew they were talking about me. And, you know, the only thing that really kind of take a lot of that away for me was to drink. You know, after high school, well, I'll back up for a second. I didn't really have too many consequences until my senior year of high school. At the first home football game of the season, we talked one of my buddies, older brother, into buying us a bottle of, that, is it 151 or 181? I can never remember. 100, you know, the 151 dark rum. He got us a bottle. And we decided that we would meet up before the game and go into the field next to the stadium and the tree line there. And, we could, you know, have a couple drinks and have a little fun and then go to the football game. Right. And, you know, most of my friends had never really gotten it, drank a little bit here and there. We get down there, and I remember as we had the bottle of rum and a 2-liter bottle of Coke, and we were standing in a circle, you know, we didn't have any like cups or ice or anything. So we were passing the bottle of rum around and, quickly followed by the 2-liter bottle of Coke. So you take a shot of rum, and chase it with a little bit of Coca-Cola. And, I remember that night because, like I said, my friends didn't really drink a whole lot back then. And, I remember the looks on their faces when they would take a swig off the bottle of rum, and, you know, they would get that, like that, oh God, like this stuff is terrible. I sat there and I just laughed at them, and I was like, you amateurs, let me show you how it's done. Right. And, I proceeded to drink about a third of the bottle. And, I remember walking out of the field, up to the football stadium and going in and grabbing a seat for the game. I think I have vague recollections of getting up every so often to walk up to the men's room. I have a kind of dreamlike remembrance of actually getting sick in the men's room at one point. And, the next thing I remember, is I'm getting woken up. My buddy, one of my other buddies, had decided, you know, I passed out in the stands about halftime, and, I was clearly intoxicated. I mean, there was just no, you know, you couldn't look at him and look at me and come to any other conclusion. So my buddies decided, like, we got to get him out of here before he gets us all in trouble. And, so they kind of stood me up, and I had my friend Orlando standing behind me with his arms wrapped around my waist to kind of prop me up. And he was guiding me through the crowd out to the parking lot. The plan was that I guess they were just going to throw me in the car and let me sleep it off. And, I got about 5 feet from the gate, right? 5 feet to freedom. And, the principal notices me and walks up, and he just makes a straight beeline for me, marches right up, and he says, son, have you been drinking tonight? And I just started laughing at him. I was like, yes, yes, I have. Right. And, then I kind of browned out again. I don't really remember too much after that. Apparently he asked me for my parents' home phone number, and he turned on his heel, walked over to the payphone and called my dad and told him that I was drunk at the stadium and, that he needed to come by and pick me up. My dad, said that when he pulled up, I was actually outside of the stadium in a folding lawn chair, just completely splayed out, head back, and that my eyes were actually rolling back in my head. And, you know, I thought, oh my God, what a mess. And, he managed to get me in the car and, get me home. I woke up the next morning on the kitchen floor, with a sleeping bag and a pillow and right next to a puddle of my own vomit. And, I just remember thinking, geez, I don't know if I can explain this one away. I think I'm really in big trouble. There are very severe consequences from that night. I had got in a lot of trouble with my school. Naturally, I was in a lot of trouble at home. And, you know, you could have asked me that night if I thought I was an alcoholic, and I would have told you no. And I remember having the talk with my father a day or two later, and he was just like, what were you thinking? And, you know, I had all manner of excuses. You know, I'd never drank liquor before, which was a lie. I was drinking on an empty stomach, and, you know, I think I got grounded for about the first 3 months of my senior year. That Monday morning, I had to go in, and I decided I wasn't going to wait for the principal to come find me. I walked into his office and sat and waited outside the door until he had a minute to talk to me. You know, he explained to me in no uncertain terms that I was actually very lucky. I lied and said that we had not been drinking on school grounds. And he said, that's good, because if you had, I would have had to expel you, because our school is a drug-free zone, right? Now, I spent the next 3 months with a lot of downtime. Other than school and sports, I wasn't allowed to talk on the phone with my friends. I wasn't really allowed to do much of anything. And I think come about November, my buddies called me and they say, hey, we're going out tonight. And I was like, okay, great. Like, why are you calling me? And they said, we're going to come pick you up and take you with us. And I was like, guys, you know, my parents are going to let me out of the house. And that same buddy that tried to walk me out to the stadium to his car was like, don't worry, I got it. And they wouldn't tell me what we were doing, but they said they were going to come pick me up. And they come over to the house. My dad says, well, that's great, but Mike's staying in tonight. And, you know, Orlando proceeded to talk with my father. And he's like, Mr. Ruth, just, you know, I think he's paid the price. Why don't you let him come out with us tonight, just for tonight, just so he can have a little fun. It's our senior year. Reluctantly, my parents relented and let me go out. We jumped in the car. We drove down, straight into Washington, D.C. and went straight to a bar. Apparently there was a bar that was infamous right on Wisconsin Avenue. Where you didn't really need to have an ID to go drink at. And, you know, it's always funny when I think back on it, just because, you know, given the severity of the consequences I had, the first chance at freedom I have, in several months, what am I doing? I'm back in a bar ordering pitchers with my buddies and getting drunk. You know, you could have asked me after that experience, if I thought I had a problem with drinking, and, you know, I would have honestly told you no. You know, come that next June, we all graduate and, everybody was off to college. You know, I picked a school to go to in North Carolina. And, you know, I picked this school for three really important reasons. They had a Division I football team. The girl-to-guy ratio was 7-1. And I don't know if anybody knows this, but I guess it's Playboy used to come out with a top 10 party school rating every year in their magazine. And this particular school was usually number one, or a very close second. But I think what really sold me, was the Saturday we drove to, you know, we drove down to go look at a couple schools. And on a Saturday morning, we went to this particular school for our official tour. And, and it's 8 o'clock in the morning and they're walking us around campus and giving us a history of the school and this is how many students are enrolled here and all this. And, I remember that morning because it was there was a home football game and at 8 o'clock in the morning, people were walking around with red Solo cups getting ready to go tailgate. Now, when we left, the next morning to drive back up here to Maryland, I remember the lie I told my dad. Cause he asked me, well, you know, out of the couple that we visited, which did you like the best? And I said, oh, it's definitely ECU. I really like it that we got a chance to go talk to the professor in the computer science department. It really seems like a creative and fun environment. I think I'm going to do really well there. And, needless to say, I didn't do very well there. That following fall, I remember going down there and it was it was interesting to me because I remember people would talk about, I'd made quite a few friends and we would talk about that, you know, oh my God, this is like such a crazy party school. There's cake parties every night. And we would kind of talk about having to kind of temper ourselves. Everybody seemed to be more concerned with getting up in the morning and going to class than I was. You know, I wanted to drink beer and chase women. And I wasn't really worried about class that much. I think I slept through, one of my final exams at the end of that semester. And the night before one of my other final exams, the girl I was talking to at the time, said, hey, my dad just gave me some money to put on my meal card. I'm gonna come get you. Let's go out, go grab dinner and we'll go to the liquor store. And I remember we got a bottle of Everclear and we drank that in a room and then we met up with some more people and went to the club and went dancing and we're drinking beer there. I remember as we went back to her dorm room, I said, please, you got to make sure I'm up at 8 o'clock in the morning. I've got my econ exam in the morning. And sure enough, she got me up and got me on my way and I made it to my exam. And this was one of the few classes I was actually interested in. So I actually did very well on the final. And as people were finishing their exam, they were walking it up and handed it to the professor and, you know, they would have a couple words and he would walk them to the door and escort them out. As I walked in to hand in my exam, he gave me a little nod and he says, so how do you think you did? And I said, well, surprise, I think I did pretty good on that exam. I really enjoyed the class and I enjoyed the subject and I actually studied quite a bit for this. And he looked at me and he goes, yeah, I can tell, right? I actually ended up doing very well on that exam. I don't even think I got a 2.0 for the semester. My parents were severely disappointed here. I'd gone from, this well-rounded, honor roll student down at this school in North Carolina and I can't seem to do that well, right? They were reluctant, but they sent me back for my second semester of college, down there. And, you know, getting drunk and trying to have a good time was more important to me than anything else. And I remember halfway through the semester, I just stopped going to all my classes. By the end of the semester, I lived like I was living like I knew like the consequences are down the road, but I could care less. I just want to have some fun. I'm young and like I said, I want to drink beer and chase women and listen to rock and roll. So end of the semester comes and my parents, drive down to pick me up and bring me back up here for the summer. And I'm just anxious and nervous. I know the report card's going to come at some point. And sure enough, it did, and it read 0.0. Now, my mom, my dad, my sister are very well educated. All three of them have master's degrees. And they always told me growing up that I was the best student in the family. So needless to say, when that report card came and they sat me down to have the talk, they were severely disappointed. I remember going out to dinner with them that night, and, you know, my dad asked me, we're talking about my plan. Okay. Well, obviously it wasn't a good fit for you down at that school. You know, we're going to bring you home. We're going to send you to the community college here. You can get a part-time job and we'll just start fresh. Right. And, I remember my dad asking me at the dinner table, so what's going to change? And I was completely stumped. I said, what do you mean? Like, what's going to change? You know, you could have asked me, right then and there if I thought I had a drinking problem, if I thought I was an alcoholic, and I would have told you no. I started going to community college, got a part-time job in a restaurant here in the area. And, you know, if you are an alcoholic or a potential alcoholic, working in the restaurant business is a great place. It's a great job to have. You know, I was 19 years old, and before too long, I was going out after work with my coworkers who were all in their early 20s, and they were introducing me to some of the different bars and bartenders here in the area, and you know, we were drinking and we were having a lot of fun. You know, about 3 years later, I dropped out of school again, decided I was going to work full time. And, before too long, I got my first DWI. I was out with my buddies from work, and we decided to go have a few drinks. And, you know, I started drinking doubles, and, I remember as we're leaving the bar that night, one of them looks at me and says, are you sure you're okay to drive? You know, I can give you a ride home if you want. And I remember thinking like, nah, I'm okay. About 2 miles from my house, I got pulled over by a Montgomery County police officer, was arrested, had my car towed, and taken down to the local jail and given a breathalyzer test, and I remember I had to call a cab to take me home. You know, you could have asked me right then and there if I thought I had a problem, and no, I was just having a bad night. I remember the lies I told. You know, I said I didn't think I'd really drink that much tonight, officer. I work in an Italian restaurant. They must have put a little bit too much wine in the pasta sauce and all this. And, yeah, I was mortified, that I'd been arrested. You know, I was terrified, that I was going to at some point have to tell my family. What it ended up happening is, I don't know if it's like this everywhere, but around here, when you get arrested for a DWI, your name goes on a mailing list, and all the lawyers that specialize in drunk driving cases, get your name and your address, and they start mailing you letters and pamphlets and give us a call. We can help you out. And, sure enough, I start receiving all this mail every day, and my parents are like, what's all this about? I was like, I don't know. About a week into it, my dad notices that one of the pamphlets that was mailed home was from a lawyer who just happened to be one of his clients. So he called his client and said, hey, you know, my son's been getting an awful lot of strange mail lately, and he got something from your office. Do you know why that would be? And he said, well, he's probably been arrested, Jim. You should go talk to him about that. So, you know, I didn't even have a chance to come clean with them. They found out before I was able to tell them, And honestly, they were disappointed. But I remember my mom asked me, she said, you know, do you think you have a drinking problem? Are you think you drink a little bit too much lately? And I was like, no, it's not a big deal, Mom. I said, you know, I don't drink any much more than my coworkers do. And, you know, we were just out and I must have had one too many that night. And I was like, besides, it's not a big deal. Most people I know have a DWI. And I remember, you know, she just kind of rolled her eyes and bowed her head. And without even looking at me, she said, I've never had a DWI. I've never been arrested. And, you know, about 366 days later, I got my second DWI. Same scenario. I'm out with my friends, and as we're leaving the bar, one of them asked me, he says, hey, I think you hit a little hard tonight. Would you like a ride? And I was like, no, I got this. I got pulled over for speeding that night, and as soon as I rolled down the window, the cop just looked at me and was like, whew, you've been drinking, haven't you? You know, and what had happened in that interim of that, in the interim of that year was, my parents kicked me out of the house, right? They were tired, of watching their son that they had tried to raise, with all these values, start to throw his life away. And, I remember I had a big blow up with my father. I cursed at him. I never cursed at my parents. And, he told me if I didn't like it, I could leave. So I remember, leaving the house and not coming back. And, I found an open room with a couple buddies that my sister knew, and, you know, proceeded to drink. And I remember being so resentful at my folks and, for kicking me out of the house. And, you know, how could they do something like that? I'm just trying to have a little fun, don't you know? And, you know, then I got my second DWI. You could have asked me, do you think you have a drinking problem? Do you think you're an alcoholic? And I would have told you no. And, yeah, that was when I was 22. I got sober a month before my 31st birthday. I'm not going to, go into great length on what those, next 9 years looked like. But needless to say, it wasn't pretty. I had, burned, the bridges with my family. I had started to become so ashamed of who and what I had become that I'd stopped talking to my friends, right? A normal night for me looked like getting off work, going to the bar, leaving a little bit early so I could make a run to the beer store before they closed, coming home and drinking as much as I could so I could finish the job, right? I didn't really sleep so much as I passed out every night. You know, I remember at this time I started to wet the bed on a regular basis. You know, as my friends from my childhood were coming home, for spring break and Easter break and summer break, I would run into them at the bars. And, you know, here I am. And I think my life's over. I think the best years have already passed me by, that I've already peaked. And, I began to withdraw from everybody and everything. And, I slowly sank into a deeper and deeper depression. And, one night I had come home, and, I remember thinking like my life is over. And I don't even know where I've gone wrong. I wish I could hit the rewind, and go back to when my life was okay, before we got here. Right. And, I remember, watching a movie, getting a little high, drinking some beer, and feeling sorry for myself. And as I walked over to climb into bed that night, sitting there laying in bed, smoking a cigarette, thinking to myself, I just don't want to do this anymore. And I flicked the cigarette across the room, and I remember telling myself, like, I don't even care what happens. At about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up. The far side of the room was engulfed in flames. The one side of the room was engulfed in flames, and the smoke detector had been going off. But what really woke me up was I had a top sheet and then a comforter on top. And I mean, the comforter on top, right over my legs, was actually on fire. And the heat from that was what kind of jarred me loose. And I remember thinking, like, oh God, I bolted out of bed, ran down the hall, down the stairs, and picked up the phone, but the phone was dead. And I thought, oh God, like, what do I do next? I ran down, we had one roommate in the basement and another roommate, next to my bedroom. I started beating on the door to get the roommate in the basement up. We both tried to make it back up to the other roommate's bedroom, but by that time the fire had grown so hot and so fast, that we couldn't even make it halfway up the stairs before it just literally sucked the breath out of you. We made it outside. A neighbor had called 911 and we could hear the sirens coming. And we're thinking, like, oh God, Grizz and his girlfriend are still up there. And, Jason ran around to the back of the house and had discovered that both of them, literally jumped out of the bedroom window on the second floor to get out of the house. One of them had actually thought, well, if I hang from the window, and then drop, I may not hurt myself because I won't have as big a distance to fall. And when he did that, the heating on the siding on the house had actually heated up, and he ended up getting third degree burns on his hand, down his forearm, and on his leg. I remember thinking to myself in the ambulance ride that night to the hospital, I can never tell anybody what really happened. I must have just fell asleep with a cigarette or left one burning in my ashtray. There's no way I could ever tell the truth about what really happened tonight. How could I? I almost killed 3 people. And I retreated further into the bottle. I had become so disgusted with myself, that I just, tried to drink it all away. What happened, was that 9 years later, here I am 30 years old. I just moved back home with mom and dad. And, cause that's, you know, what all successful 30-year-olds do. And, I was gonna, they were gonna give me a clean slate. I was gonna make a fresh start and, I was going to get my life back on track. And, sure enough, an old buddy called and we went out to a bar one night, and, I blacked out, and I was actually awoken, by Montgomery County's finest, laying on a sidewalk next to a 7-Eleven. I remember thinking at some point that a cheeseburger Big Bite sounded really good. So I was going to walk up the street to the 7-Eleven and get myself something to eat. And, I'm awoken by a cop kicking me in the bottom of the shoe and shining the light down in my eyes. And he asked me, he said, son, do you need some help? And, I remember just thinking, like, yeah, yes. He says, do you have anybody we can call? I really don't feel like taking you to jail tonight. Is there somebody that can come by and pick you up? And I gave him my dad's phone number again. This wasn't the first time the cops had called the house to have somebody come pick me up. It was probably like the 7th or the 8th, but I can close my eyes and I can remember the look on his face was as he got out of the car. And you all know what that look is. How could you? Again, you know, he was just disappointed and he was angry. And, you know, that was the night I hit the jumping off place. Yeah, I remember being in the backseat of the car driving back to the house thinking like, I'm just so tired. Like, I feel tired. I'm emotionally tired. I just feel worn out. I don't know how I'm going to not drink, but I don't know how I'm going to live my life without alcohol. And what happened was we decided to go talk to my family doctor about this. And I remember my dad going back into the examination room with me and the doctor. And, you know, my dad was like, we need to do something about Michael's alcoholism. And I was like, whoa, like very strong words here. And, you know, God bless the doctor. He asked my father to leave the room so he could talk to me man to man. And, I didn't know this until the end of the session, but he was a member of our fellowship and had been sober for over 20 years. You know, he sat down and talked to me in a way about my drinking that I'd never been talked to, in a way that nobody had ever talked to me about before. You know, I did not feel like I was being judged. I did not feel like I was being looked down on. And, I immediately knew like that there may be something to what this guy has to say. What he told me to do was to go to this outpatient clinic right up the street and sign up. And that's, you know, that's precisely what I did. And I remember, by the end of that first week, finding out that actually all the counselors that worked there were sober members of our fellowship. And I remember, you know, that made an impression on me, just cause I was like, all right, I think the gig's up here. You know, I had a way of being able to say the right thing at the right time, to the lawyer and the judges, to the police, to my parents, to my family, the friends, even the therapist. And, you know, I remember thinking like, I don't think they're going to buy any of my BS. And, what they did was they began to talk to me about the disease of alcoholism and how it was a progressive disease. And that if I needed, if I intended to stay sober, I needed to start going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, the nights that I wasn't there, they told me to go to a meeting. I started going to meetings, just cause I was lonely and it felt like something, you know, it was a good way to occupy my time. I wasn't really convinced, that I was an alcoholic, but I knew I had a drinking problem that I should probably do something about it. You know, if there's ever a point in time in my life that I thought, that if I wasn't convinced that there was a higher power working in my life, it was about, 90 days in. And, you know, it was a Saturday and I was at the local clubhouse. I'd gone for the 6 o'clock meeting and I was about to, hang out for an hour and go to the 8 o'clock meeting because I was just looking for something to do. And, the guy that led the meeting walked up to me immediately after the prayer, stuck his hand out and said, "Hey, you should go right up the street to this church on the corner. There's a young people's meeting up there. You should go check it out. And you know, they're a good group. They have a lot of fun and, you should go." And, you know, I figured what the hell, I'll give it a try. And, as I'm walking the 3 blocks down to the church, there are two guys sitting in the parking lot, sponsor and his sponsee. The sponsee had just drank again about 30 days before, he was actually in the Navy and stationed at the Naval Hospital a couple miles away and had to report to duty that night. And, him and his sponsor decided to go to this meeting in Bethesda, because it was close to the hospital. He'd be able to make a meeting and meet up with his sponsor and still get to work on time that night. This is not a meeting that either one of them regularly attended. As I'm walking down the street, the sponsee starts telling the sponsor, you know, "God, I feel so terrible all the time. I don't know what to do. I thought I was going to come here and get some help and start to feel better." And the sponsor said, "Well, you need to start helping people here. The key to happiness and sobriety is giving it away. you need to find the newcomer and stick your hand out and be of service to him. And I remember the sponsor looked back at his sponsor and says, I hate talking to people. I don't know how to talk to people. That was the PG version. He had a couple more colorful adjectives to add to that description. But the sponsor said, it's very easy. He sees me around the corner, doesn't recognize me, and says, watch me. This man walked up, stuck out his hand, said, hi, my name is Bill. He said, your first time at the meeting? I said, yes. He said, well, great. Welcome. He walked me inside the church. He walked me down the hallway to the meeting room, showed me where I could grab a seat, where the coffee and the cookies were, where the bathrooms were. And, those are all the things that I would have been too afraid to ask somebody, if I was going in there without having met somebody in the parking lot. And, it's funny because to this day, I remember how welcome that made me feel. And, those are the things that I do when I see people that I don't recognize in my regular meetings. As I was leaving the meeting, I remember two women were sitting there talking, and, one looked at the other and put up her hand and looked right at me and said, Mike, keep coming back. It works. And, that made such an impression on me because A, she remembered my name, and she wanted me to come back. And it had been very, very long time in my life, to somebody had actually invited me back somewhere. I only got a couple minutes left, to talk about my sobriety, but I have had a chance to walk through all 12 steps. I was an absolute skeptic. I delayed, I gave excuses, right? But when it came down time to do something, I did it. I made my 8-step list, and me and my sponsor went through it, and I had a chance to start making amends. Those three people that I almost killed in that house that night, I reached out to them and was able to make face-to-face amends with them. And, I used to look at the promises and think that that was some kind of hokey, corny, thing that Bill Wilson stuck in there. I never thought it would be something that would be attainable in my life until it started to happen. My message to anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous that is just coming in is that there is hope here. I came in a broken man and was absolutely helpless and hopeless. And what happened is I found a group of people that knew what it was like and said, hey, why don't you come do what we're doing? And, we always got room for one more. And, they took me in and they loved me until I could learn to start to love myself. And, I began to work the steps and I began to be of service. And, I remember the most wonderful thing began to happen. I began to feel useful again in my life. It had been a very long time since I felt like I had a purpose here. But I began to feel useful, and I began to realize that I have a purpose in my life. I've been granted an incredible gift, and that's the gift of hope and recovery. In order to keep that, I got to give it away. And what a tremendous gift, purposeful gift to have received, here in Alcoholics Anonymous. The hope is here. I came here and I found recovery, and in recovery I found hope and joy. My heart has opened up. I have begun to be able to believe in and see things happening in my life that I thought would never be possible. I lived to good purpose, and I think I'll just end with that. You know, I am so, so grateful, for the gifts, those gifts, that I've received here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful, for the many men and women that were great examples here, and dragged me along, however, skeptical I was. And, you know, thank you for letting me share.